My Best to Friends, a letter written by Z. Charnot in the early 1970s. Late April of 69, I arrived in New Jersey, was picked up at the airport by Dick Katz and Alan Bogan and an industrial designer friend of his. They took me to Dr. Laidlaw's office, where I was introduced to three people with whom I rode in the back seat talking. Eventually him questioning, my answering, until he rather exclaimed he'd found himself fascinated, but it was a little bit too much, too fast. We arrived at the conference. There is a chronicle of the content of the conference. It is available through Dr. Laidlaw's office on Park Ave in New York. The personal supplement to that chronicle is as follows. Made no provision for a place for me to sleep. Dr. Puharik's disposition to drive home in the evenings left his bed available. I was in the room with Dr. Frank Voidick, Dr. John Periakos, the latter of whom I became a friend of consequence. Dr. Hamilton invited her home in Massachusetts. Kay had driven the VW across the country and arrived the second day, calling first from Pennsylvania, then from Tony Cox's in Spring Valley. Kay accompanied me to Massachusetts. After about a week, a conference had been planned in Pleasant Valley, New York. Richard Hockey paid for it. I had eaten and been provided shelter by Dr. Hamilton, with no known alternative. I had neither funds to return west, get a place, eat, none. Melinda, as a surprise, sent H., who was completing a month of substitute teaching, to repay her educational loan. She came. I returned to Massachusetts with her for a week or so, until Tony Cox had put together funds for a conference in Nova Scotia, and Dr. Hamilton offered to let us use her cabin. We took Melinda with us to Long Island to visit Cy Slutsky, a physics teacher at New York State University. He expected us and had provided housing. We couldn't find his house, stayed in a motel, and left for Toronto, where we were to meet Tony in a few days. Richard Hockey began negotiations with Dr. Hamilton to buy a building next to her school. We were able to secure it. We also attempted to buy property from Dr. Hamilton next to her cabin in Nova Scotia. The conference in Nova Scotia was painful, yielded a little, with great difficulty. Tony had given me some money with which I paid some bills, and sent some to Jana. When we got possession of the one house in Sheffield, Massachusetts, I visited Jana to come by means of the Plymouth, and a little cash I could send, and a gas credit. She declined. Many reasons, explanations are available, but she didn't come, and I couldn't return. H. and I had lived in Peterborough, Ontario, during some of the recuperative period from early 1969 and 1968. We took an apartment in July, left in August to return to Sheffield, Massachusetts. We stayed at Sheffield briefly and intermittently. We went to Virginia in late August to visit Kay, Casey Institute, Paul N., etc. Joel Andrews was playing at the Casey Institute. Joel and I got together for a preliminary tape recording session using some of the poems I'd written in June and July. From there, to see Paul N. The car was giving some trouble, and Joe G. offered to meet us in Virginia. We hesitated, met him, he gave us money to repair the VW, and we were on our way to Charleston, Virginia. There we got the VW repaired, using about all we had. I was sent a golf credit card to pay for staying at a hotel, and we breathed deeply, called Dr. Stoner, to whom I had been introduced in New York by Lou Mobley, made an appointment, and took off for Pennsylvania. We met. We agreed on commencing research for him. He gave us $150 for immediate expenses, agreed to round up $4,000, and sent it to us in Canada, and we were on our way. We moved to Orillia. Now, the next part of this paper, I'm not sure if it is the same, a continuation of the same letter, or if it's a separate letter, but as the editor, I decided to put both together. John Lennon says I'm crazy, but has called me his friend. Barry Ballister in December 24th, 1970 issue of Rolling Stone says I'm a self-appointed doctor. The New York Times about a year before says I'm a compelling leader listed with Charles Manson, and I don't believe one ought to find out who someone is by such means, nor care too much about the who or what. I've not defended myself in such matters, nor do I feel now is the time to start. The self is a boundary kept by paying attention to it often and much. When what we are is nourished by so much of the universe, to keep a boundary is to diminish that nourishment and to diminish the scheme of care that the fund of consciousness expresses through this identity participated in. Tim Leary contained from continuing to be all that he is and is becoming in his own extensive scheme of care has required a pledge of violence to pierce the barrier constructed around him. I gave John Lennon the copy of Playboy, which had Tim Leary's nomination of John Lennon as the new leader of the hedonic revolution. At the time, John was fasting in Denmark, driven pretty hard in a search for a way to pierce the barriers in his own extensive scheme of care. Hedonic revolution? Violence? Who wants the hassle? But who wants the beast that keeps growing larger and bolder with every devouring success? In January, I stood in the clear, cold night in Denmark, in a valley in the north, while a story was told. Soldiers of a king, whatever that is, were coming to gain taxes from the farmers of the northern fjord. Armed with their knowledge of the terrain and farm tools mostly, they knocked off the lot as they rode, as the soldiers rode their horses, through a crevice from the plateau upon which they'd come to the lowlands where the farmers were. Someone got back to the king, whatever one of those are, and more soldiers were sent. Less expectant, the farmers were slain in the lowlands below. Their nature was such that the rallying cry from any of them was met mostly with, "Who are you to tell me what to do?" They fell. Sure, united we stand. But by what means? United how? The scene I poured myself into in California was invaded by maybe 30-some carloads of narcs in February of 69. A 50-some page injunction was delivered to me since I started the scene. I mean, I've got some barriers to pierce, too. Trial by rumor. What's trial for? Blame? You mean the cause is so simple you only have to find the means to have the whole cause? Whose hands did it? I follow with some bits I've written before. Do You Make Peace was written the night John Brower stayed in the hotel in Denmark when he came to visit John Lennon about the Toronto Peace Festival. Brower was in the room across from mine. My best to friends, if you'll be so good as to publish this. And my little afterword after this letter is, I don't know if it ever was published by anyone. I don't know if anyone actually ever read it before I did. But I did publish it. It's available online at Google Docs, and it's available here at Audio Boo, and I also recorded it at Blog Talk Radio at Anaclism Radio Program.